Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Things Therapy. I am Lisa Tahir, your host, and I am in studio in Los Angeles with a very special guest who's a dear friend of mine and a brilliant therapist. And before we bring her on the show, I am a licensed clinical social worker practicing as an intuitive psychotherapist. I am a Reiki practitioner. I utilize EMDR. And if you want to find me to book sessions both in Los Angeles and New Orleans, you can find me at nolatherapy.com. It's the abbreviation for New Orleans Los Angeles Therapy. You can also reach out that way if you're interested in being a guest on my show or a sponsor of this show. So today I'm with Nina Watt. She's a marriage and family therapist and a LPC, licensed professional counselor. Her website's ninawatt.com, ninawatt.com. She has offices in both Silver Lake, Los Angeles, and Portland, Oregon. And what I really like about Nina's approach in her work is that she provides home-based relationship intensive to couples. And I think this allows more attunement to the needs of couples, working with them in their home, seeing what their living space is like, just noting different dynamics that a therapist, you know, myself primarily working in the office setting, that we don't get to see. So she talks in her work about couples being stuck inside of their own behaviors and patterns and how their limiting beliefs affect the dynamic of the relationship and just how relational love is such a beautiful part of our lives. So I would like to bring Nina Watt on. Hello, Nina.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you for being with me today.
Thank you for the invite.
You're welcome. So where would you like to jump in? I don't know if you want to start with telling us some about your background, what brought you to being a therapist, or more about the work that you do with couples.
Well, we could talk about what brought me to therapy, because
it's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of different.
Please.
I was one of these people that didn't know what to do when I grew up, didn't know what I was supposed to be, and spent probably the first 25 years of my life stressing about that, which is interesting now because I work with a lot of younger people that do the same thing that I did. And I think it was after sort of a dreadful midlife crisis that I decided that the only obvious thing to do with my life experience was to go back to school to become a therapist.
Okay.
So I went back to grad school relatively late. I was in my early 40s when I went back to grad school.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And really started doing this work in 2001.
Okay.
Probably. So now I'm kind of feeling like, you know, there's people in my place that have been a therapist for 30 years. I've been doing it 15 at this point. But it's a hopeful thing, I think, that you can not know what you want to be when you grow up and then figure it out in your early 40s. And I love the work I do.
I know you do.
I love it so much. Got a good job.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, when I read a little about you, that you have an MFA also in creative writing.
Yeah.
And you lived in an ashram in India?
Well, my undergraduate degree was in performing arts.
I did not know that.
And I bring that definitely a sense of drama to my sessions. You know, I think I look for windows of opportunity where I can sort of call it going in for the juggler. So I'll create a dramatic experience for people in which they can access sort of a deeper truth or a deeper emotion for themselves. I know that's my training in acting. Then I went back to school in my 30s. I'll try another job. Let me try being a writer. And I ended up writing for the stage.
Okay.
But, you know, never did anything with that afterwards, right? So I was always consider myself a generalist.
Sure.
Now I'm finally found my way, so it's good.
You know, this makes more sense. I didn't know your background in acting,
yeah.
But even in promoting our show, for our listeners, I think of Nina as the Virginia Satir, a modern-day Virginia Satir. And if you don't know who that is, she is a founding mother of therapy. She had a clinic in Palo Alto, California. And just she went in and worked with families in particular, and she would go in the home or even in her office and move people around. Like, she'd take a few minutes to see what dynamic's going on and literally say, stop, you get up and sit here, you move there, I want you out of the room, like totally like a performance. And so I had no idea that's the background you bring to your work, and it makes perfect sense. That's why I felt that intuitively, that in the way you work with your clients.
Well, that's a huge compliment. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know how similar I am to Virginia Satir, but I guess I can see some of the similarities that we both spent a lot of time at the Esalen Institute.
Yeah.
I went there in 2000.
Okay.
And spent 2 years as a staff member, extended
Very cool.
student down at Esalen, and that was a huge part of my own growth. But what I like about Virginia's work is her ability to stay focused in the present, which is what I do. I'm psychodynamically trained.
Right.
I definitely will be in the moment with whatever is in the room with people.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important with couples work.
It is.
To deal with what comes up, with what's in front of you. I also think Virginia was a bit of a manipulator.
Yeah, how so?
Well, she just would, she was always, I think, thinking ahead and thinking of ways to sort of lead people into.
Got it. Down where she sees.
Yeah, and I definitely relate to that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a supervisor in Oakland, one of my you know, graduate level supervisor, and he told me one day, I remember he said that our work requires that we be a bit of a trickster.
Yeah.
That, you know, you have to think like 5 steps ahead of what's going on in the room and try to sort of move people around and get them to have a different experience of themselves and each other.
Yes. That's reminding me when I was being supervised for my LCSW license. It's 16 years ago. I had two LCSW supervisors. One of them will be on the show, Deborah Volker, at some mm-hmm. point in the future. She's a brilliant trauma therapist. And we were in a staff meeting at my agency. And I remember I really loved Carl Whitaker, who was a founding father in therapy. He did really kind of odd things, you know, like confrontive, just saying things kind of off the wall and often taken as like, what the hell are you saying? Because I like doing that sometime in my work if it's a client I feel comfortable with. But we were in the staff meeting just talking about therapy dynamics, and I said therapy is a manipulation. And one of my supervisors got really upset with that and said, what are you talking about? Like, that's wrong, or it's not that. And I said, well, think about it. A person's in the room or a couple, and they're presenting information, and my head's like down the road, like you were just saying. And I see someplace I'd like for them to get that I think they need to get, but you might not just blab that out, you know, directly if they're not ready or other work needs to be done. So it's kind of like a manipulation in a healthy, helpful way to get them where they need to be or where they want to be.
Yeah, I agree completely. I also think that this work requires a person to be a diplomat as well.
Yes.
You know, because you have to say really difficult things to people in a way that they can hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got two people coming in, and it's so easy for people to run scared or to be triggered or to feel defensive or something. So you have to be so, you have to be so diplomatic and sort of manipulative, get them so that they'll go, oh, right, maybe that could be true. I am doing that in this relationship, and maybe it isn't a good thing that I'm doing.
So yes.
People are very defended about the way they are. And, you know yourself, you get couples in the room, and often the first session is just like, I'm going to tell one of them, you know, I'm going to tell you exactly how the other person is making it difficult for me to be in this relationship, and hopefully, you know,
you can change, help them change.
Yeah, hopefully you and I will get together to change them.
Yeah.
Which is, you have to let them get that out of their system and then bring it back to self.
Exactly.
Which is a self-responsibility piece that I, you know, is so important to me in my work.
Can you say more about that, the self-responsibility piece?
Yeah, I think it's that, you know, the way I work in the here and now, mm-hmm. and I work with the activation. You know, people tend to get activated or reactive or triggered.
Triggered, yeah.
In relationship. And when that happens, I'll sort of parse out the couples and work with each one of them individually. So we'll go into individual work where
okay.
it'll be like, what are you noticing? What's going on with you right now? What are you experiencing? What are you doing in there? What are you creating in there? What sort of experience for yourself? And once people can sort of take responsibility for that,
yeah,
it's easier for them to walk out of it. But, you know, you have to get off the blame game and expectations, which are the killer
of
relationships,
and
power struggles and all of that, and sort of step back. So, you know, to really look at what are you doing inside of yourself and how are you creating an experience for yourself that's really causing you suffering and misery, right?
Do you notice that you tend to do that particular piece of the work with the couple or individually, or does it depend?
Doesn't matter. What I've found is if you do it with a couple in the room, you know, and I make it very clear, okay, you know, this was your day, and next time it might be
his day. Oh, I like
that. So,
okay, I like that.
What it does is it allows the partner to look at their beloved in a different way. That this behavior isn't about being directed at me or isn't about me and I need to defend myself around, but rather they can sort of observe their person in a process.
Yeah.
You know, and watch them try to unravel what's going on with them. You can sit, it really lends itself to a lot of empathy.
For your partner?
Yeah, you can look and say, wow, this isn't really about me, what's going on with this person right now. They're really
yeah.
trapped up in their own experience of themselves and their own suffering about something. So it allows you to sort of step back and go, this isn't mine. This is theirs. And they're suffering, and I want to, you know,
I want to help. Oh, that's beautiful.
Which is this whole idea that I really strongly believe, too, that, you know, part of this is, the school I went to in San Francisco, the California Institute of Integral Studies, which is an amazing school, that relationship work is really a spiritual path. You can mm-hmm. look at it as, you know, I'm going to be in relationship and I'm going to try to be the best human being I can be, and I'm going to try to grow and change for the best and become more compassionate, more humane, and all that. But you use the context of relationship
okay.
as, you know, a spiritual pathway,
sure.
a place to grow as a person.
So when I hear you speak about this, I'm thinking for you to help your clients in the couple, you know, relationship, one of them to kind of sit back, depersonalize, you know, step out of their triggers for a moment to see their partner suffering, hurting, that's caused the reactiveness, et cetera, and sit back, you know, to be like, wow, this is really hard for you. How can I help you? I think that takes a lot of ego strength. Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, not ego that's in like I'm going to dominate, I'm going to control, I'm going to usurp you. You know, ego strength as far as having the ability to really contain your own reactivity and set that aside to have empathy. So I think that person would have to have the ability of empathy. And what do you do, because I've experienced and seen, you know, a partner that doesn't have that kind of empathy, to sit back and really, you know, let the other person have their feeling and experience. How might you work in that situation if someone doesn't have, say, the empathy to attune to their partner and help that process along?
Well, I think everybody has the ability to be empathic.
Okay.
And if they don't, it's because they're too caught up in their own, you know, yak to sort of see it. So the first thing is getting them to self-regulate. If you can get yourself out of your reactivity, out of that part of your brain, your amygdala, your triggeredness, and
yes.
get into your rationale, you can see it, but you have to calm yourself down. And that's the problem with a lot of therapeutic models of relationship, to me anyways,
yeah.
because they require that people be reasonable. And you know, you and I both know that once you're in a fight with someone or once you're activated, you're not really being reasonable.
Right.
So that's the somatic piece about bringing, you know, regulating yourself down to a place of calm. And then you can look across and see where the other person is coming from. If you don't have that, you don't really have a relationship, because a relationship is about relating.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to have the ability to self-reflect when you're in a relationship. I think that that's, you know, I always say to my clients, when you're a kid, you want to go out with someone because they dress cool.
Uh-huh.
And then you're in your 20s and you want to go out with someone because they make you laugh. I mean, how many times have you heard that? He makes me laugh. And then, really what makes a relationship workable is the individual willingness of each partner to self-reflect and go, maybe my person is right. Maybe I do that too much. And maybe I need to think about why I do that too much. That now is the number one quality, that if you can find that in a human being, a person's ability to self-reflect.
Self-reflect, yes.
That's the don't ever let that person go. Because that's a huge thing. If you don't have that, there's always a ceiling of a relationship, and you can't really go any higher because you're always dealing with defensiveness or person's lack of responsibility. You're sort of stuck.
That totally makes sense. So you're able to assess with your clients, well, assess as they're speaking to you, kind of where they're at.
Yeah.
With this ability to relate and connect at a deep level with each other.
And I think it's based on their ability to be self-reflective, to be self-aware.
Yeah.
You know, to notice what they're doing and notice, like, why did I just say that? What was that really about? Or why am I so angry right now? What is really going on? Because, as you know, anger is a really sort of base, easy emotion. It's the first one we go to.
That often might, you know, overlay, be on top of some fear, you know.
I mean, it's usually vulnerability. Always that way.
Yeah.
If it's not, it's a boundary. I mean, anger is very useful. It tells us, this feels wrong. This is wrong.
Stop.
Yeah. Right? But that's a very different sort of motivation than just that fighting, defensive fighting, you know?
Yes. So what brought you to work with couples so specifically, as opposed to, I do a ton of work with individuals. I have many couples, but for me, I think my best fit is with the individual. So I'm just curious, for you, how come you chose?
Well, because, you know, that is a good question. Because the truth is that I really like to be interactive.
Okay.
And I'm not one of these therapists that just will sit and listen. And I found pretty early that couples work was really dynamic, really interactive. It goes really fast because you're tracking a lot of different things. You're tracking what is up in the room, you're tracking their psychodynamic history, your family of origin stuff, you're tracking the power play, you're tracking the body language, your
coping mechanisms,
everything is in the room with you, your relationship to each one of the people, where, you know, so it's very complex in a way, and to track all that stuff at one time, and for me it makes the time fly, and it makes me love my job, and it's one of the reasons why I can do that couple intensives, where I can sit with a couple in their home for, you know, minimum 2 hours, but I've gone up to four hours working with a couple, and it feels like an hour and a half to me.
I see. It makes you alive. You're just like beaming.
I love it.
Right now.
I love couples work.
What I was just thinking to ask you is, I've worked with couples in my office setting. I haven't gone into the home, and I'm curious, what differences do you notice? And will you talk about your relationship intensives and how, you know, couples would benefit, you know, versus office setting? I'm curious what that's like.
Well, in Los Angeles, where I do the relationship intensives, it makes a lot of sense for busy families. with kids, with the traffic, you know, it can be easier for a couple to just meet and and we work together for 2, 2.5, 3 hours in their home. It's easier
wow.
in LA.
Sure.
The dynamic, what I've noticed,
yeah.
and I don't know if this is across the board, but what I've noticed is that people start behaving badly quicker.
Oh, cool. So yeah, you see more.
Yeah.
More
yeah.
sooner.
And it starts. So they're in their own environment and they're not in my environment. And I decide where we sit, so that sort of gives
yeah.
me the experience of being in control.
That's
right?
A Virginia Satir coming
I'm
out.
I'm going to sit here, and you're going to sit there, and
yes.
this is how it's going to work. But they'll. It's easier to see the underneath stuff that goes on when they're in
okay.
their home, even if it's just like, you know, someone saying, Can you get Nina a glass of water? You know, I mean, turn
even
off
the
sink.
Tone, yes,
turn off the sink. You know, and it's like, okay, so there's that. It's they just let down their guard a little easier.
You know, I never thought of that. You're totally right.
Yeah, when they're in my office, everybody's on really good behavior, and it can take a couple of sessions before
yeah.
they ramp up into like bad behavior. But in the home, they can't. You see it right away, and that's where I'll start. You know, then
how
I'll start
so?
With,
yeah.
well, like, what, so what just happened there with you and the water, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's there in the room is
in the present.
In the present moment. And inevitably, that's the issue in their relationship.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it shows up pretty quick.
That's a symptom of, mm-hmm. of what underlies
yeah.
the issues
yeah.
and problems.
Yeah.
Very cool. So... do you want to open the phone lines in case somebody wants to call during the next?
All right.
Okay. So if anyone would like to call in, and be patient in case we're in the middle of a conversation, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. 818-602-4929. So, again, getting back to these relationship intensives. And you have an office in Portland, Oregon. So can you talk to us about the back and forth that you do, what that looks like, and how clients in both cities, you know, can work with you.
Yeah, well, you relate, right? You're
I
doing
do.
It too.
Yes.
And it's funny, I met another therapist in Los Angeles that did it from Chicago to
Interesting.
LA.
Interesting.
So I moved from San Francisco to Portland.
Okay.
2006 or something, and started a private practice in Portland, but ended up leaving Portland, not liking Portland, and leaving Portland, but really getting a niche there. I've been a therapist in Portland for 10 years, and
mm-hmm.
and when I moved away from Portland, I told my people that I was only going to be able to see them once every 2 weeks. And
okay.
right across the board, everybody was sort of okay with that. I think that it's really good for the relationship stuff, and it's even good for the individual stuff because people have a chance to sort of practice new ways or to become more aware of, to start noticing more of. It gives them more time in between sessions.
To reflect and try out these new skills and such you're helping
exactly,
them develop.
Exactly. And you can't, in a week, you know, especially with couples, you've got so much going on a week.
Yeah.
With modern day couples, they really would only interact maybe how many hours in a week with kids and jobs and all of that. So
right.
2 weeks gives them more time. So I moved to Los Angeles and was commuting back to Portland to work every 2 weeks to see
okay.
people up there. And then I've now started something up here. And I think I found my place in Portland. The people I see are sort of, 30s and 40s with
oh, cool.
young kids and creative and tattooed and modern and progressive and bright and conscious, and most of them have done some sort of work. And I think I've found that demographic in Silver Lake. So I'm really excited. I found myself an office there, and I'm going to work with people, you know, downtown and Los Feliz and Echo Park. And hopefully they're going to be okay with me doing every other week. I'll go
yeah.
Portland a week, LA a week, Portland a week, LA a week.
Because I even noticed on your website how you do talk about seeing couples every other week
yeah.
As opposed to weekly. And I thought that was really cool and interesting because most therapists, you know, we'd like someone to come in
yeah.
every week. So it was different. And I noticed that you really want them to take that time in between
yeah.
sessions to be reflective.
Absolutely. It works out better. And then they can come with examples of where things worked and where they didn't, or... you know, they have something to sort of work work with.
Yeah.
And for me, it works, too, because, you know, sometimes, I don't know how you feel about it, but weekly therapy is, you know, it's different. It's different. It's very scheduled. It's very ritualistic. A lot of people say that that's how therapy works best, is, the, you know, within the context of everything being
so boundary,
the same and the boundaried and all that. And I don't know. It's kind of a modern world, and maybe we can look at therapy as having sitting outside the box, you know, a bit with Skyping or the new, you know, soon we'll be doing virtual reality counseling, right?
That would be amazing and crazy.
There are programs that are going to start allowing you to do that.
Like what?
Well, that you'll put on the headset, and you'll be able to be in real time, in sort of volumetric real time with your clients.
Really, Nina?
Yeah, it's different.
Wow.
I mean, it's hard for us as like relational people to get our head around that, and even like Skype therapy or all that. But you got to remember that, you know, this younger people and a new world order is suggesting that we're going to be doing it differently.
Yeah.
You know, there's a different way to be in the world that isn't worse than, or it's just different.
And it does reflect, I think, our times and the ways we work differently, you know, work more, I find, you know, than and such.
Yeah. I know the idea of the sort of the blank slate therapist, or the, you know, the therapist is
The tabula rasa.
People don't mind, in my experience, people don't want that. In fact, that's probably the, I'm always curious when the first time I meet with someone, I'll say, well, what have you been in therapy before and what didn't work for you?
That's a good question.
Yeah. And like, honestly, 8 times out of 10, people will say, you know, I don't like someone that's just going to sit and
listen. Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I was trained, I don't know if you were, really to be that blank slate.
That's how we were all trained.
Yeah, and just, you know, facilitate transference. And for our listeners, transference is when our clients start to project onto us everything as if, you know, we were their mother, their father, their partner, you know, their friend. Like, they start transferring all the unfinished business and dynamics. And so we start experiencing that as the other people in their lives. Mm-hmm. And it's like, whoa, like, that's when I know, okay, this is, therapy's working.
Yeah.
You know, though it's personally difficult to
well, and
all
I think
that.
it requires weekly therapy, a real sort of depth.
Well, and
psychotherapy
that, yeah, and that's
process.
A different.
It's different than what I do, for sure. Well, I'm real solution focused, and
well, and I think every person and every couple brings in, has different needs.
Yeah,
you know, so not everyone, that doesn't work for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think you have to assess. I like assessing it. It sounds like you do too. What does this person? Mm-hmm. What does this couple need? Mm-hmm. What's going to help them the most based on their schedule, their finances, where they're at. So, yeah, like, I don't have a requirement either, and I'm happy to just have time in between the sessions so that they can reflect and bring some things in that they've tried out on their own. So
and
that makes sense
to
me.
You know, and there's a time and a place for everything. One of my internships was in hospice.
Oh, wow.
And working with bereavement and grief, and that's a very different animal. You know, that's not an interactive, directive sort of, you know, situation. That's a real listening and compassionate and sitting, a lot of quiet time and letting the person just sort of work through their stuff.
Holding space for
Holding space.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you get two, like, you know, dueling couples, people dueling in a couple in the room. I mean, you need to sort of step in and get in there and say.
And be directive.
Yeah, and be really directive.
Yeah. So, I have written down, I had thought of some questions to ask you. We've touched on a lot of them, actually, just in our conversations. I'm wondering, what can couples look forward to in working with you? Because not a lot of people imagine I'm looking forward going to therapy, especially couples. So I'm curious about what can they expect in working with you and even look forward to?
I like to try to have fun in the room with people. So there's a certain amount of levity that I will bring to it. I think it's fun to laugh at yourself, to find humor. you know, that's what they've established, that is one of the signs of the happiest couples, the couples that have been together the longest.
That happiest. What is that?
So they have a sense of humor about their faults. So I think that I like to have fun. It's not serious. I want to be, you know, I'm working with people in many cases that are 15, 20 years younger than me.
Yeah.
I want them to know that I certainly appreciate and respect their modernness, their views.
Sure.
So I'm not old-fashioned. I'll be, you know, I want to be with them. I think that's fun.
Yes. Mirroring, you talk in your work too about mirroring a person's experience, reflecting back, you know, themselves, so they can see themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
And address what they want to change, what they want to keep.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's life experience. I think that's why, you know, it's a benefit to be older in our work. You know, I've lived through a lot myself.
Yeah.
And I think my clients know that when I look at them and I say, you know, I know what you're talking about. I get it. It comes from a place of really knowing. That's that mirroring back, you know.
I was just thinking that.
But the mirroring back can be really tough, too. I mean, you can hold a mirror up to someone and say, you know, this is what I feel with you, or this is what I see and experience with you, and are you happy with that?
Yeah.
And people will, you know, that's the tough part of therapy, is when people sort of sit back and go, oh my God, you know, I don't know that I'm happy with that. I don't know that I like what I see. But in those moments, because as you know, the critics and everybody are so huge, people love to bring themselves down.
Right.
And that's the piece that, you know, I always will try to be positive and see the good intention behind everybody's struggles, you know.
I like where you say, I'll never forget your potential, even if you do.
No,
and just holding that out there
with
them and for them.
Yeah. For sure, I do that a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Because people like to bag on themselves so much. I mean, it's just terrible to witness, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a reframe. You'll reframe something that's going on with someone into a place where maybe they can see what they did as something that made sense at that time, and that maybe they can forgive themselves or learn from it and move on, rather than, you know, I notice that with a lot of people tend to sort of generalize about themselves, you know, I am bad, or I never find the right person, or I'm always like this. And
those limiting beliefs that then their life begins to take form and shape out of.
Totally.
Yeah. When we were talking a little bit ago about that mirror that you may hold up for them, and how it could be, that's a hard thing to do. You know, just even sitting with you, and from the day we met, you're so easy to talk to. And it does come from that place of you knowing, you know, like, so I am certain that clients come in, whatever it is, and just you put them at ease with your demeanor and the peace and the work you've done, obviously, on yourself, you know. So I'm thinking that, you know, it flows well.
Thank you, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, I do see the humanness in every situation and the struggle of being a human being and how hard it is. And my heart just opens up to the people that come into my room with all that. You know, people are so sweet.
Yeah.
Which is a really interesting place for me to have this experience with real sort of human experiences with people in a room, and then to leave my office and to look at the world. And, you know, how do you reconcile how lovely people are and how much they want to be loved and seen and appreciated and respected?
Yes.
You know, and how do you put that against, you know, all the other stuff that's going on in the world that's so hard?
Yeah.
Where we're acting so badly as a human race, you know?
Mm-hmm. And what we do to ourselves and then others.
And others.
From
and
a lack of love. Yeah, to animals
earth.
And children.
Yeah.
For me, I specialize in childhood trauma, sexual abuse, violence, and relationships and family of origin work, and just the damage that does to one's psyche. You know, I mean, self-esteem is I know that's a common word, but just one's relationship with oneself and the beliefs we have about ourselves when we go through those experiences, and then how we, you know, begin to manifest our lives out of those, that brokenness.
And even in the interaction with other people, it shows up. You know, this stuff is written into our body.
It is.
And you
physiologically.
Know, totally.
And the brain chemistry.
Yeah, so you have to sort of untangle all that. You can have the cerebral understanding of what's going on, but you have to change the felt experience of what's going on. You have to,
right,
you know, calm yourself down, you know.
Self-soothing.
Yeah, my wife is not my mother.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I've got to remember that.
And I think in working with couples, you know, those family of origin, those deep dynamics definitely come up, and that's why we are triggered. You know, mm-hmm. if we didn't have unfinished business, we would never
absolutely.
Be triggered. You know, so, like, that's what excites me about being a therapist, is, like, sitting with someone or a couple and then seeing, like, these pop-ups of, like, that's it. Like,
right.
that's, like, the source fracture. That's, like, the original wound. That is, you know, and I'll stop couples. Hold on.
Yeah.
Like, say what you just said again to her or to him, and what does that remind you of? And sometimes it can take
right.
a bit. Like, that doesn't remind me of anything.
Right.
You know, she's a fucking bitch.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, no, come on. Like, because there's an energy about
yeah.
it. Don't
yeah.
you feel there's an energy
yeah.
about some statements?
Totally.
That it's like, that is not just the here and now.
Absolutely.
That's
that
from,
is,
like,
that's
way back.
That's the stuff you bring in, right? And that's why it's so cool, where relationship can actually be obviously a place to work through that stuff.
It's a perfect container for that.
And to become a better human being, you know, to grow outside of, to grow bigger than what you thought you ever could be.
Yeah.
Using the relationship to do that.
And I think in finding, looking and finding a partner, if you can find someone that wants to help you heal those places, don't let them go.
No,
you know, because most
agree.
People want the fun, they want the slick, you know, this is great,
I know,
but that's not real life.
No.
You know, life gets messy, and if you can find somebody that wants to be with you in your triggers and help you through.
And work on it, and work on themselves,
and
you know, just like separate the two people out into, like, you deal with your stuff, and I'll deal with my stuff,
right.
and let's love each other.
Exactly.
And see how we can create this amazing thing together, right?
Yeah.
And then protect that. Because I see so many couples come in and they've just got their relationship, you know, if the relationship exists as the sum of two parts, they've got it on the ground and they're just kicking it to death, right? You
yeah.
know, like, I mean, they're so mean to this thing, the relationship. So, you know, sort of taking that relationship and making it something that they need to protect and take care of.
And cherish. So do you find that couples might come in where the shit's so far off the scales, you know, it's so far down the road, like,
mm-hmm.
that it's kind of, in my experience, some damage control first? You know, like, how do you handle that when maybe they needed to come in way earlier than what they have?
Yeah, in all my, what is it, 15 years, almost 15 years of doing this, I've only had two couples that I said to them, you know, you've taken too long.
Mm.
The damage mm-hmm. is too great. I don't even know how to deal with the way you treat each other. It's not, you really wouldn't even treat your worst enemy like that, but only two.
Yeah, how was that received? And
I don't know. I would imagine that both of these couples did not make it.
Okay.
That they had waited too long and there was too much resentment and too much contempt. That there was just no way to crawl out from under. I mean, I've seen some pretty tough couples, you know.
Yeah.
When something like, say, infidelity walks into the room,
right.
there's a lot of upset and a lot of thinking, you know, I can't be in this relationship anymore. This person has betrayed me and all.
Yeah.
And then you have to look at that even as, like, you know, look at it from a spiritual context. Like, what makes you think that you can spend an entire lifetime with a human being and not watch them make a mistake?
Will you say more about that? Because that's important.
Well, I think that, you know, people make mistakes.
Yeah. We're human.
And we're human, and we make mistakes, and we make poor choices. And if you're going to turn on the person because they made a mistake, that says a little bit more about you than it
yeah.
does about them and their coming to understand that they've made a mistake and wanting to work it out. Or even, you know, even if they didn't have the strength to say, I want out of this relationship, therefore
right.
I'm going to go have an affair with somebody and get myself caught so
yeah.
we can break up.
Exactly.
You know, that informs us that the person didn't have the courage or the strength to say...
To say how they feel and what they
right,
think,
and
that this isn't really working so well
right,
for me.
Right,
or I'm not happy.
Yeah, I'm not happy. But the sort of righteousness that can come with infidelity is something I'll try to eliminate right away. Because it's not possible. Well, it's not possible to be in a relationship with someone for 20, 30, 40 years without watching them make a mistake.
Of course.
They just do. So are you going to be human enough to let your beloved be human enough?
Right.
And how can you forgive them and learn to retrust? And, you know, it takes two people. Because I'd say more often than not when I'm dealing with infidelity, it's because there's something really wrong with the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the person
wants
out. That's
gone unaddressed.
Yeah. Not that the person wants out of the relationship, but they actually desperately want their relationship to be different.
Yes. And this is definitely a way to bring attention mm-hmm. to, I need this to be different.
Right.
I've worked with a lot of couples when there's been infidelity.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. The way that the other partner finds out, I find significant.
Totally. Absolutely.
Because that kind of informs some dynamics going on under the surface about their communication or lack thereof.
Yeah.
And how connected they are, I think, or not connected they are.
Well, yeah, and it's hard. I mean, sex in relationship is you know, I could sit and talk to a couple the first session if they'd be willing about their sex life, and the whole relationship will sort of be mapped out in how they are with each other sexually. And it's difficult in this age that we live in where, you know, 52% of marriages end in divorce and all that. And there's a lot of issues around sexuality, you know, dried up sexuality.
Yes.
But, you know, I even think that that's workable.
I do too.
You can get that back.
You can.
If you're willing to
try some things different and new.
To hear some tough stuff and to start looking at what your blocks are and speaking up about, you know, where you really are inside. We keep a lot of that private, you know.
And even physiology changing. You know, couples that have been together and are getting older together, the body changes and doesn't respond in the same way sexually. And I work with a lot of couples to navigate that. Like, what pleases me now, you know, what pleased me in the past does not now because my body's not working in that way. And how to navigate that together.
I was reading something recently, though, that talked about that the subjective sexual experience of people in their 50s and 60s is actually higher. They're happier with their sex life and they feel more sexually and they experiment bigger. It's more intimate. It's bigger than it is with 18-year-olds, you know. That
I bet because they're more comfortable with themselves,
I mean, I think young, we have this fantasy that, you know, sex is really hot when you're young and your bodies and these two beautiful bodies are banging together and all that. But their capacity to have a different sort of sexual experience with each other is limited by their experience and their
life experience in depth.
That you know, you're in your 50s and 60s and you have sex, it's a whole different ball game that includes like relational sort of intimacy and fantasy and sort of the safety within the context of you knowing yourself and knowing the other to really like take it way out there, way more than, you know, two young people that
Definitely.
Are just very physical.
Yes, it's different. The dimensions at which I think couples connect, depending on what kind of age range they're at and in. Yeah. How are you feeling about the show, Nina? This is great.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, it's just the conversation. I was nervous. I had an anxiety dream last night. I was telling Lisa, working out in my dreams, I arrived. It was a cooking show. I know nothing about cooking.
And I don't cook well enough to be having a cooking show, so we'd be shit out of luck if it was a cooking show today showing up here. That's funny. So how can people reach you and to become your client in either Portland or here in Silver Lake in the Los Angeles area?
Well, I do the in-home relationship intensives. I'll do them in Laurel Canyon, Studio City, West Hollywood, Hollywood, in that sort of mid-strip. So if you're around
those areas,
I'd be willing to work with you a minimum of 2 hours. I'll come to
per
your
session.
Home.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Other than that, I've just opened an office in Silver Lake, so hopefully we'll get the Silver Lake, Los Feliz, Echo Park people and downtown people to come and see me in person. Portland, I've been in the same place for years and years and years, right down in Northwest Portland.
Okay.
Portland is charming for everybody that has been there knows where I'm in Nob Hill.
That's great.
So I guess the best way to contact me would be to go to my website, ninawatt.com. There's no S on the Watt. And give me a call, and hopefully I'll pick up, and we make an appointment, and you come in, and you see if you like me, and if it's going to be a fit. And if it is, we will start seeing each other every 2 weeks. I can see people in Los Angeles weekly, but only on Friday. But
sure. And Nina's website is really great. A lot of the things that we talked about, you go in depth, even which I have never seen, a release form that really talks about the therapeutic relationship and what clients can expect, not just, you know, the nuts and bolts, like what you pay and how you pay and cancellation, but about, you know, the relational experience of being in therapy and what you can offer them and, you know, what you expect of them to bring with their honesty and openness. And it's just a great website.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, and I also want to say that, you know, I work with love in all forms, all of its forms. So I'm really comfortable working with gay, lesbian,
bisexual,
with, you know,
queer clients.
Polyamorous.
Yeah.
I do a lot of that work with clients up in Portland.
Okay.
You know, different combinations of love.
Of love. I like that.
Yeah.
The way you say it. Different combinations of love.
Yeah.
Because that is what it is, right? It's just love.
It's all just humans just trying to love. Exactly.
Yeah. I think we have the best job on the planet.
I do too.
Nina, I feel so lucky. I think back to my 24-year-old self when I finished social work school at Tulane and was getting my licensure and working with clients. And sometimes I'm like, God, like,
I know.
You know, how do people work with me? I was so young and not didn't know anything. I mean, I had a rich family experience of both positive and traumatic things. And I started therapy at the age of 21. I still participate in therapy at I'm about to turn 45. So I believe in a personal healing practice is most important in our line of work and just in general for people to be happy and and such. And now about to turn 45, I'm like, wow, like, you know, I work with clients much older than me often. And some of them have come in and they're like, you look like you're 30. Like, what are you going to do to help me? I said, I'm not sure, but sit down and tell me about what's going on and let's see if, you know, we can figure this out. And I think you and I both help people feel really safe and secure by our warmth and genuineness and knowledge. You know, that goes beyond just what we've learned in school and read. It's like who we are,
well,
I think,
it's,
in the world.
It's about being authentic, I think.
It is.
You know, and that mirroring authenticity to clients is huge. Just be real. Just that's all I want. People, is
yes.
I want them to be real with themselves and to I'll be real with them, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We have about another couple of minutes. Anything important for you, Nina, to share that we haven't talked about? Or
one thing, well, maybe if we've got 2 minutes,
yeah,
I'll talk about my individual work.
Please.
That I work with a lot of people with anxiety, struggling with anxiety. I'm really comfortable with that, helping people sort of sit with that and come to terms with that. I also do something sort of unconventional in that I'll work with using addicts, and that is something that's hard to find in therapy.
I
don't require that you need to be fixed before you get therapy. That I know I have a lot of respect for the process towards abstinence.
Yeah.
Or, moderation management sort of thing.
Like harm reduction models?
Yeah. So I will work with people that are in full-blown sort of addiction.
I do, too, with the harm reduction model.
The only thing I require is that you don't come to sessions.
Me, too.
High or intoxicated. But,
absolutely.
I think that that's a very heroic struggle.
It is.
To quit you know, to get that monkey off your back. And I come at it from a very respectful place of, you know, what that's been like for a person to struggle with addiction.
this goes back to me when we were speaking about people just being human mm-hmm. and able to, you know, forgive and accept. You know, not everyone's going to go from being an addict to being abstinent. I don't think that's the only way. I think if we can help our clients reduce harm to themselves, yeah. you know, and even use in a way that's less lethal, that's yeah. less dangerous,
yes.
you know, that that's a success.
Yes, I'd agree. I'd agree.
So that's good for people to know that you do work with addicts mm-hmm. in whatever stage and mm-hmm. shape, form their addiction takes and individuals. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Nina, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Lisa.
NinaWatt.com. You're welcome. and I just thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was fun.
It was very fun.
Okay.
That concludes our show for this week. Please join me next week. I have back on the show clairvoyant artist, medical intuitive, and astrologer Amadeus. We are doing part two of a three-part series relating to her work. And next week, we will be talking about frequency, patterns, and psychology. So join me again, same time. Thank you.
You're listening to All Things Therapy with Lisa Tahir.